So good afternoon, everyone. Today, I'm going to be talking about our system called IQ, which is for sharing the data center network. So this is joint work with folks from Stanford and Windows Azure. So not so long ago, things were really great. In fact, enterprises which wanted to host large-scale web services bought their own dedicated compute and network infrastructure, and they deployed them in some shared data center somewhere in the world. This is what, in fact, every enterprise did. And in fact, this was really great because they got the performance that they paid for. But then along came the cloud, which promised basically lower costs for everyone as long as they shared the infrastructure. But what happened to performance? Well, this is what happens to performance. Like, this is a screenshot of Memcached's latencies, specifically the 99th percentile latency of a shared Memcached cluster hosted by Google App Engine. So this screenshot shows that the 99th percentile latency basically varies throughout the day, and it goes as high as 200 milliseconds, and this is a screenshot taken as of today morning. This highlights a very dismal picture as far as performance is concerned. Now, there could be several reasons that could cause this variability. It could be CPU, it could be memory, but one thing that is guaranteed to cause this performance interference is network bandwidth or congestion. So the sad state of affairs of today's network data plane can be summarized in just one picture, which is a huge traffic jam. And the situation arises because today we are focused on increasing the utilization of our infrastructure, which causes increasing congestion, and therefore it kills performance predictability. If you dig deeper and try to see what's really going on, the key issue is that today's transport protocols, such as TCP and UDP, are not really built with predictable performance in mind. Let me dig a little deeper into this. So the status quo that we have today is really insufficient. TCP has served us well in managing congestion for the last 30 years, but the amount of bandwidth that a tenant gets basically depends on the number of flows that he or she starts and also the other tenant's performance. This does not give you predictable bandwidth. And we have all been taught in our undergraduate networking course that weighted fair queuing essentially gives you some kind of isolation between multiple tenants or multiple traffic classes. But the scale at which we are facing these problems in the cloud today is just extremely challenging. There are tens of thousands of tenants, and it's really impractical when you look at the communication patterns to install like weighted fair queuing queues everywhere in your network, which can be like tens of thousands of switches. But I'd like to take a step back and ask the question, where does congestion exactly happen? How do providers deal with this problem today? So today, what providers do is they say, I'm going to build a super fast network that's going to give me like practically infinite bandwidth, but then does that really solve the problem? Consider this example where there are two VMs, there's a red and the blue tenant, which are basically sharing the same physical access link on the machine on the top right. It's a shared 10 gigabit per second pipe. Now, the problem really manifests itself at the edge because the edge capacities are limited. Now, as red starts more and more flows, it's going to create contention for this access link, and that's going to cause a problem. So now I'm going to show you evidence that today's clusters or today's data centers actually come pretty darn close to this ideal data center fabric that I described, where the core has pretty much zero or no congestion. So for this, we did a congestion study on Windows Azure. Azure's data centers look something like this. There are a bunch of racks which are connected to a leaf layer of top-of-rack switches. Now, these leaf layers are in turn connected by a spine layer whose sole purpose is to provide uniform cross-sectional bandwidth across hundreds of racks in a cluster. Now, when speaking to operators, we have seen quotes that typically the oversubscription ratio is less than 3-to-1, or in fact, they are building full bisection bandwidth networks. Now, it is helpful to ask, well, in this network, where does congestion exactly happen? To do this, we conducted a measurement study. Specifically, we looked at link utilizations of both the edge and the core links over a 2-week time interval. Now, these link utilizations are 5-minute averages, so even the 99.9th percentile link utilization statistics over a 2-week time interval corresponds to minutes of congestion. So what we see is that the edge utilization is in fact much more than the core, than what we see in the core of the network. So why does this happen? There can be two reasons. The first reason is that because the core has a lot of links, traffic in your data center is very nicely spread. In fact, in this specific cluster, they used ECMP. And therefore, the peak utilization of any single core link is, in fact, much lower than the edge of the network. And in fact, the second reason could be that there's a lot of traffic locality within the rack, but it still supports the observation that congestion manifests itself at the core or at the edge of the network. In fact, we dug deeper. We just didn't look at link utilizations. We also looked at where packet drops happen. In the hottest cluster, where the average utilization was, in fact, greater than 30%, which is typically pretty high, for every packet that got dropped in the core of the network, there were over 1,000 packets that were getting dropped at the edge. And in fact, in over 16 out of the 17 clusters that we surveyed, there were like close to zero packet drops at the network core. So this suggests that problem, even in reality, in today's data center networks, occurs predominantly at the edge. So that brings us to our system, IQ. IQ is a system that we built that provides predictable bandwidth partitioning completely at the edge of the network. So this is good news for the customers because now they can provision their virtual infrastructure just as they would provision a real dedicated infrastructure. So for each VM, they specify the CPU capacity, memory, as well as the network capacity in like absolute units, like gigabits per second, and that's it. They don't worry about how the traffic flows between VMs, nothing of that sort. And in fact, this is even good news for the provider because, well, now they can differentiate themselves from their competitors because no provider offers rate guarantees to VMs today. And now I'm going to show you how the observation that congestion predominantly exists at the edge of the network essentially lends itself to a very simple and scalable design for bandwidth arbitration that is possible completely at the edge. In fact, that is the key contribution of our system IQ. It uses the observation that congestion happens only at the edge of the network, and therefore this lends itself to a very nice, simple architecture. In fact, I'm also going to describe our software implementation that works pretty good at 10 gigabits per second. So let me start off with an example. Consider this scenario. So as I showed you, congestion happens only at the edge, so I'm going to throw the network away. Our system IQ exists at the edge in a shim layer. The edge can be the hypervisor or the NIC. So in this instance, I have two tenants, the red and the blue. The red VM and the blue VM share a single access link on the top right. The red has purchased, let's say, 2 gigabits per second of capacity, and the blue has purchased 8 gigabits per second. Let's say, to start off with, there were just two flows. Because we would like to be work conserving, just so that spare capacity is utilized, IQ allocates bandwidth to each of these two flows, say, equally. I'm going to talk about how these rate control mechanisms work in a second, but bear with me for a minute. So next, let's say a third flow belonging to the blue tenant starts. Because the utilization is now going to increase, it's going to cause congestion, again, at the access link. This access link information is completely local. It is immediately visible to the receive side module, which I'm going to describe how. And therefore, it uses this information to allocate capacity in accordance to the VM's rate guarantees. In this case, the blue gets 8 gigabits per second, and the 2 gigabit per second for red gets divided equally between the two flows. Now, the interesting thing happens when there's a third flow. In fact, the third flow gets 5 gigabits per second, and therefore it creates a congestion on the transmit side, reducing the rate of the cross blue flow to 5 gigabits per second. So this local effect of reducing a flow's rate to 5 gigabits per second has a non-local effect of freeing congestion elsewhere in the network, which is then immediately detected by the receive side module and recursively allocated to the remaining red flows. So as you can see, in this way, just by purely looking at local link utilizations, IQ allocates bandwidth between VMs in a completely distributed fashion without any centralized coordination. So how does this mechanism work under the hood? If you dig deeper, what we do is we create what are called congestion detectors, which are just modules created for every VM that are co-located on a single dedicated machine. So in this case, red has one and blue has one. Now the job of a congestion detector is to basically partition the physical link into multiple virtual links whose capacities are determined based on the ratios of the minimum bandwidth guarantees given to each VM. So in this case, there are two active tenants. So therefore, the red gets 2 gigabits per second virtual link and blue gets 8 gigabits per second. So the job of the congestion detector now becomes very simple. Its only job is to ensure that the aggregate input rate matches the capacity which is allocated to the VM. And how we do this is just through congestion control. In fact, we use a high-speed congestion control algorithm, RCP. And how RCP works is that essentially it looks at local link utilization, and it computes a single rate R that it should advertise to the senders which are communicating with the VM receiver, such that the aggregate input rate matches the drain rate. So this rate feedback is an explicit packet, which is computed by IQ, and in fact, it is sent independently apart from VM traffic. So in this case, the feedback packet says 1 gigabit per second. So in order to make sure that every sender gets its feedback in a timely fashion, IQ samples packets in the data plane. So it picks one sender at random for every 10 kilobytes of packets that are received, and it then sends the feedback to the source of the packet. So this naturally tends to select sources which are communicating at high rates. Now, this is also nice because at the receiver side, you don't need to maintain any per source state. It's completely stateless. And of course, on the transmit side, there needs to be something that ensures that these rate limits are in fact maintained. We have rate limiters on the transmit side that continuously listen for these feedback packets and program them based on the explicit rate that is indicated in the feedback packets. So on the transmit, we have a per source destination pair allocation, and on the receive side, we have only per receiver side state. Now, of course, in building this system, we realized that there are a number of practical issues that matter, which really dictate the quality of the performance guarantees that you're able to give. In particular, the timescales over which you're able to achieve these rate guarantees really boils down to the timescales at which the rate control algorithm operates. In fact, this problem is made even harder because today's data center switches are typically shallow buffered, and they're likely to remain as we move forward to 40 gigabits per second. So you need to react really fast before your buffer starts filling up and packets are getting dropped in your network. In the paper, we show that for a particular choice of parameters, RCP converges very quickly. In fact, in the worst case, where there are n long-lived flows all competing for a single bottleneck, RCP converges within milliseconds. And in fact, this bodes well with the fact that today's data center network switches have milliseconds worth of buffering. In contrast, TCP takes about hundreds of milliseconds. So, throughout this talk, I made the assumption that the core of the network is not going to be congested at all. But in practice, that may not be the case. In fact, this can happen if there are link failures. For instance, if there are transient ECMP collisions, because routing need not be perfect, or if there are link failures, traffic gets routed along a different path. So there are two failure scenarios which I'd like to describe here. The first thing is that there's mild transient network condition, in which case the network links get congested. For this, we rely on ECN. So ECN is explicit congestion notification. It's available in pretty much all commodity data center network switches today. So what ECN enables us to do is that the network can, in a tenant agnostic fashion, inform the edge that there's some congested link in the network. Of course, now the edge, with full knowledge of tenant information, uses this congestion information to slow down the sources so as to not cause persistent congestion in the network core. And this makes the scenario better for everyone. Of course, in the unlikely event where the network gets severely congested and packet drops start happening all over the place, it could happen that your feedback packets never reach the source in the first place. Of course, in this case, IQ is very conservative. So if you don't get feedback packets for about like 100 milliseconds, then IQ starts reducing its rate in a multiplicative fashion, just like what TCP does. So this ensures that you don't make the network suck even more if there are more problems. So all of what I've described today is real. We built IQ as a Linux kernel module and as a Windows filter driver. The Linux version is open source and is, in fact, available on the website. There's full documentation, and I hope some of you would download, try it out, and give me some feedback. IQ is implemented as a queuing discipline, and it sits on the transmit and receive path. It's completely non-intrusive. It requires no changes to your applications. And it works regardless whether you use TCP or UDP. It just works out of the box. Now, of course, in building IQ, we realized that it's not just the algorithms, but also a number of engineering details really mattered in the final version. In particular, how do we make sure that rate limiters that are implemented in software work well at high speeds? The world has moved on to multicore, but unfortunately, our rate limiters are still designed for the single core era, which means these token bucket rate limiters have a single queue which is locked and unlocked for every single packet that is being transmitted. Now, this creates a lot of contention on the transmit path, and I'm going to show you how this increases the CPU overhead and also the per packet latencies. Of course, the problem is easily solvable. In the case, we split the global token queue into multiple per CPU queues. So this allows us to alleviate the per CPU or the log contention by having each CPU maintain its own local stash of tokens. So think of these as like sloppy counters, for those of you who are aware of it. Now, only when a CPU loses its tokens, it grabs the global lock and grabs a bunch of tokens. Now, this ensures that the cost of acquiring a lock is basically amortized over multiple packet transmissions. And as I'm going to show you, this is also going to improve that CPU usage dramatically. So we did a very simple test to confirm this. We use a traffic generator that just generates packets of varying packet sizes. Now, what we saw was that at low packet sizes, where you have like high packet rates, IQ, when you compare it with today's state-of-the-art rate limiters, such as the hierarchical token bucket, at 5 gigabits per second, is 33% more efficient. In fact, we try to compare it at like higher rates, like 9 gigabits per second, but today's rate limiters don't even work at that line rates. And of course, as the packet rate reduces, the CPU overhead decreases accordingly. We also did a similar test for latencies. So for this, we used a simple request response generation program that sat on every single CPU and tried to contend on this critical path in the transmit path. So what we saw was that the end-to-end latency is now going to be determined by a lot of factors. There's a stack latency, and of course, there's the per-packet acquisition lock latency. And by distributing the lock across multiple CPUs, we see a dramatic increase or decrease in the median latency. In fact, median latency reduced by a factor of 2, and it was able to sustain much higher packet rates. So these are some of the micro benchmarks that gave us faith in our system. There are more micro benchmarks about the speed of reactions and things like that in the paper. But now I'm going to spend some time talking about the largest macro evaluation that we did. So in this evaluation, we had a cluster of 16 machines. So each machine had a 10 gigabit per second NIC. There are two tenants here. One is memcached, and the other one is an adversarial UDP tenant. So each machine has two tenants. So there's a memcached process and a UDP process. For memcached, we used an external load generation program that basically generates load in an open loop fashion. We used about 144,000 set requests per second. And these set requests were basically 6 kilobyte objects, and this load was evenly distributed across all the 4 memcached servers. Now, this resulted in an average load of about 2.3 gigabits per second per server. And note that because there are two tenants sharing on every single machine, we gave like equal bandwidth guarantees. So there's 5 gigabits per second for memcached and 5 gigabits per second for UDP. And this is much less than the rate that it asked for. The UDP tenant, being mischievous, it tries to send traffic in a very adversarial fashion. So each UDP program basically just picks one UDP program at random on another server, blasts at the maximum rate that it can for a period of 0.5 seconds, and then it sleeps for 0.5 seconds, and then it continues. So note that the utilization, the average utilization of UDP tenant on a single machine is still 5 gigabits per second. In fact, if you look at the log monitoring program, you'll see that on a timescale of like one or a few seconds, the utilization is not much more than what it asked for. So it's going to be invisible on second timescales. So what did we see? The first experiment, we of course didn't have any traffic interference. This is just to evaluate the baseline performance of the cluster. We saw that the 99.9th percentile latency was about 666 microseconds, and the cluster was well provisioned to handle the external load of 144,000 kilo requests per second. Now, without interference, but if you just have IQ in the path without the UDP tenant, we observed an interesting thing, which is the 99.9th percentile latency actually drops. And the reason is that because we use RCP, which reacts at a timescale which are much faster than TCP, this helps avoid the fine timescale contentions that happen in the network, thereby reducing the 99.9th percentile latency. Of course, if you turn on the UDP tenant, things get really worse. With UDP, the 99.9th percentile latency shoots up by over 3 orders of magnitude. Now, at the median, this latency increase was caused only by queuing delays, both on the transmit and on the receive side. But at the high percentiles, there were a lot of timeouts. But surprisingly, the cluster still had enough capabilities to saturate 144,000 requests per second. And of course, with IQ, we see that the performance is very close to what you would get on a bare metal cluster. You cannot expect the performance to be equal to that of a bare metal scenario because the total load on the cluster is now higher. It serves about 7 gigabits per second as opposed to just 2.3 gigabits per second. So that concludes my talk. Today, I presented IQ. Now, conceptually, you can think of IQ as a system that exists at the edge of your network, and it schedules flows, so it's like a giant scheduler for your network, in accordance to rate guarantees which are given to specific VMs. IQ is open source, and I hope some of you would try it out. Thank you.
Hi, Hans Fugel from Facebook. Can you tell me a little bit about how this performs in lightly loaded situations, but with high fan in, fan out? For example, you had 4 Memcache servers and 12 hosts. What if you had 100 or 1,000 hosts, and they're all pounding these Memcache servers at lower rates, but with lots of burstiness?
Okay, so that's a good question. We haven't evaluated that very specific scenario, but let me tell you what happens. If you look at link utilizations over a short enough time scale, you can actually observe the peak that it actually reaches 10 gigabits per second very quickly, let's say over 100 microsecond timescales. And the feedback mechanism operates in the data path and makes sure to send this feedback in a very timely fashion. So as we can expect to see the same behavior that I showed in the previous slide, where there were 16 machines, to a much larger scenario as well.
Okay, thanks. Hi, Kostin Raichu, Politehnika Bucharest.
Yes.
So you've got TCP running with a fairly large control loop, not large, but larger time scale. Mm-hmm. And then you have a mechanism that polices it at a much shorter time scales. So I'm just wondering, what's the interaction of these control loops? And I mean, I guess you'll have underutilization, so how bad is it?
That's a good question. We haven't seen like very significant underutilizations. So what we observed was that we haven't done a very rigorous study of this, but what we observed is that as long as there's a timescale separation between like how fast one control loop reacts over the other, things usually work out pretty fine.
But aren't they working at the same time? I mean, how can you have a time separation?
Oh, so the RCP algorithm actually operates at like RTT timescales, and of course TCP also operates at RTT timescales, but the speed of convergence for RCP is in fact much faster than TCP. So TCP sees like the rate immediately because RCP has converged quickly.
Thanks.
Yeah, Chuck from NEC Labs in Princeton. Now, you're relying on the virtual machines to specify their bandwidth requirements. And how sensitive is your algorithm to errors or inaccuracies that the user may have in specifying bandwidth requirements on the VM?
That's a good question. So IQ is a fairly low-level mechanism. So we assume that some entity gives us these rate guarantees. Of course, the tenant has to undergo like a capacity planning thing where they basically specify maybe a gigabit per second, try out, run the unit test and see what happens with the performance, just as they would on a dedicated infrastructure. But what this allows you to do is that the customers do not have to buy like new NICs every time they have to change their capacities. Because these mechanisms are completely virtual, you can just change the mechanisms in a matter of hours. But yes, you would have to go through the capacity planning procedure to decide, like, okay, what rate should I set for my application performance?
No, I understand, but how sensitive is your application to that number?
It really depends on the application.
Oh, you cannot just vary the VM bandwidth requirements and see how sensitive your algorithm is?
Okay, so for the experiments that we conducted, if you look at the Memcached experiment, the total load that was offered to each Memcached server was, in fact, much less than the capacity. Now, if you start operating at loads which are close to the capacity, you'll have a problem. Your tail latencies are going to go up no matter what, right? So we haven't done a sensitivity analysis. And also, these capacities have to be provisioned just once. The customer doesn't tell us in real time what these capacities are. They give us the capacities, the provider places them across the infrastructure, and then this mechanism works. It doesn't decide the capacities. The capacities are static.
Thank you.
Next speaker.